Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace.
If you are a regular listener to the Beacon Broadcast, you know that we have moved into Chapter 7. Of the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, a very puzzling book to many people, but a very valuable one if it is studied thoughtfully and is understood with at least some degree of accuracy. There are 12 chapters in the book. It was written by Solomon the king. His purpose was to investigate the various areas of life to find out what truly adds meaning to life. And it's not, in many cases, the things, in most cases, I would say, it is not the things that people generally assume will add meaning to life. But as we come into Chapter 7, he gives us a number of things that are better, and they are a surprising list indeed. And this all builds off of the question at the end of Chapter 6. The last verse of Chapter 6 opens with these words, "But who knows what is good for a man in life?" Who knows what is good for a man in life? That's an interesting question, one that would be worth pondering for a while. The answer, of course, is God knows. And the answer also is that most people don't know. But because Solomon is being inspired by God in writing this book, we have the benefit of godly wisdom, godly understanding to supply a proper answer to that question. What is good for man in this world? And we are going to find four things in Chapter 7, and they are as follows. Number one, sorrow is better than mirth. Sorrow is better than mirth. That's verses 1 through 4. Second, rebuke is better than frivolity. Verses 5 through 7. Third, patience is better than anger, verses 8 through 10. And finally, wisdom is better than money, verses 11 through 14. Now, we'll have to go back and look at these more carefully, but that's where we're going in Chapter 7. Sorrow is better than mirth. And there are basically three statements to support that particular contention. And the first one is that death is better than birth. And then he goes on to tell us that funerals are better than parties and that tears are better than laughter. Now, all of those things would probably not be understood by most people. Death is better than birth? That's a very, very puzzling statement in many ways, but that's exactly what Solomon tells us. He says in verse 1, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death is better than the day of one's birth." The day of death is better than the day of birth. What can that possibly mean? Well, there are several explanations that people offer, and I will tell you what some of them are, and then I will tell you what I think is the correct one. But some think this is talking about the death of others. The day of death of other people is better than the day of one's birth, but that doesn't make a lot of sense. Some people think that it's saying that death cuts off a sinful life. In other words, in the case of those people who are going to squander their lives with sin, it would be better to die than to go on living. And that, I think we would all agree, is absolutely true. But some also think, before I move on to the but, some also think that this is talking about the death of the righteous is better than life because absent from the body, present with the Lord. To be with Christ is far better, Paul tells us in the New Testament. And so there would be some reasons to think that that may be what Solomon is talking about. But I think in the light of the context, here's what he's saying. He's saying that though people welcome birth and shun death, and that certainly is the truth, there is more value in death than in birth. And the second statement will make that more clear, but I see that I need to stop and welcome you to this Monday, October 12 edition of the Beacon Broadcast, and thank those whose financial gifts enable us to continue to teach on this station. Now, we're talking that the overall category here is that sorrow is better than mirth. And under that category, there are three statements. I gave them to you earlier, but now I'm putting it back together. There are three statements, and the first one is that death is better than birth. We've just addressed that one. And if the examination of that one doesn't seem complete and leaves you a little bit hanging, and I think it probably does, then I think the second one will help explain the first one, and that is funerals are better than parties. Because it goes on to say, verse 2, better to go to the house of mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, not mourning as opposed to evening, but mourning as opposed to laughter. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for a sad countenance, or rather by a sad countenance, the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Now we understand what it is that he's getting at here. Funerals are better than parties. Now, again, that's not our sense of things. We generally would far prefer to attend a party than a funeral, than a wake. I say generally would prefer, though some people, I think, have learned not only the benefit to their own soul by considering the reality of death, and that's what I think Solomon is getting at here, but have also learned that this is a wonderful way to reach out and minister to others. And people are more open to ministry, I have found over the years, at funerals than at weddings, at funerals than at parties. We all love a good party. I do. A wedding is a good example of that. Weddings usually involve a certain level of feasting and partying and merriment, the very sort of thing that Solomon is talking about here. And that's wonderful. I love those occasions. I love to enter into the joy of the bride and the groom and their families and the things that are going on. I love the receptions and the rehearsal dinners. I love the toasts that are given, the words that are said to encourage the couple. I love all of this. I love the interaction that I have with the guests at that time. But that's all very lighthearted, and most people are not particularly interested in anything very substantial or heavy in times of weddings. I've made it my practice over the years to always work a gospel message into my wedding presentation, my wedding ceremony, whatever you want to call it. I wouldn't conduct a wedding if the bride and groom were not in favor of that. Now, I try not to make it long, try not to make it tedious. I recognize that there are generally people there who are unconverted and have little understanding or interest in those things, and other times people who are very shallow Christians and they're not used to anything substantial at all. They just want to get the ceremony over with so that we can get on to the reception, get on to the party. But it's a wonderful opportunity to present the gospel, but unless the Lord is working in an unusual way, most people are not particularly interested in hearing about that. They're not particularly tuned in, not particularly interested. I'm thinking about a wedding that I was involved in several months ago now. And I had occasion to talk to some of the family of one of the two members of the bridal party, and I won't even identify whether bride or groom because I don't want people who are members of my church and who might know who I'm talking about to feel like I'm talking personally about them. But I had opportunity to talk to some of the family members of those who were being married and try to engage them in spiritual conversation, and I got a pretty abrupt cutoff. I don't want to say it was necessarily nasty or rebuke, but I got a pretty abrupt cutoff from someone that I knew was not saved. That's what I was trying, or at least that's what I had been told by the member of the family that I did know that was saved. But I wasn't expecting anything quite that curt, quite that abrupt, quite that strong. But there it was. He let me know on no uncertain terms that he was not interested. He didn't want to talk about that. Yeah, this is a party. Do you know, I've seldom received that kind of reception at times of funerals. I say seldom. I can think of an exception once or twice over my 47 years of pastoring now, and I've lost track of how many funerals that I've conducted over those years. But if there's only two or three a year, that would have to be up to 150, and I think on average it's probably a little more than that. So I've probably conducted well over 200 funerals by now, and I can remember a time or two when someone has become very, very openly offended by what I had to say in regard to the gospel, and let that be known. But generally, I have found that most people are sober and thoughtful and are not only willing to listen, but seem to have a desire to hear something that talks about life after death, that talks about the destiny of the soul, that talks about eternal matters, eternal verities, we sometimes call them. Why? Because there's a forced seriousness that hangs over funerals. We are dealing with the reality of death, something that many people would far prefer to push out of their lives, but though they may be successful at that most of the time, you can't do that at a funeral. It's staring you in the face. So funerals are better than parties because they encourage reflection on the inevitability of death. We're all going to die. And there it is, a reminder of it. It's a time to embrace the sober realities of death and to profit from them. Those who seek to avoid the whole subject of death, as many do, are more or less forced to deal with it at times of mourning. And so what Solomon is saying is the house of feasting seldom improves anyone. Parties seldom improve anyone as far as their quality of life and certainly as far as their preparedness to die. But funerals often do. God often uses them to help people. And so I think that statement that funerals are better than parties, which is very clear in this passage, helps explain the first one, that death is better than birth for the same reason. Because birth is a happy occasion, but it doesn't necessarily cause serious reflection, but death generally does. So, death is better than birth. At least the death of someone else can do you good more than the birth of a child, as wonderful as that is. And funerals are better than parties to do good to those who are living. We'll take these things to heart. We'll return to them, Lord willing, tomorrow. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.